Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS! Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island you got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday, starting at 9, 8 central. On CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Welcome to On the Bench. I am your host for this episode, Brendan Sinone. I'm joined by Zach Blostein, Chris Nee. It's been a minute since all three of us have been together on this bench. Gentlemen, how are we doing?
Doing well.
I feel old.
Why do you feel old, Chris?
My knees have been killing me recently, more so than normal. I mean, my knees always hurt, but like, I don't know what it is. I didn't do anything. I haven't overexerted myself. They've just hurt like hell lately.
Chris knees. Maybe it's because you haven't over. Maybe you haven't done anything. They need to get moved around. They're a little like rickety.
Arthritis is a hell of a thing.
Zach, how are your knees?
One of them is reconstructed.
That's interesting. Same here. All right, let's get into the show. An RIP to all of our knees, which are well beyond the years that they should be. First off, I want to give a shout out to our sponsor, Chattanooga Whiskey. The plan is for them to re-up for this upcoming year. Paperwork should be done fairly soon, knock on wood. I know it's probably in poor taste and bad luck to go ahead and do that beforehand before it's finalized, but that's the plan. And we're super excited to have them on with us for another year. Want to give a shout out to you guys on the Knowles 24/7 message board who gave some awesome recommendations of their experience learning about Chattanooga Whiskey through the podcast. So a thank you to you for your patronage and for taking a chance on a really high end whiskey product. So thank you, Chattanooga Whiskey. Really happy to have you for another year. And also, we're brought to you by
the Turner Group.
The Turner Group. Zach, you got a chance to set up a home that your parents purchased through the Turner Group this weekend.
Yeah. Awesome experience. Great people to work with. They're experts in their field, and we appreciate their support.
So I want to get into a handful of things today, some recruiting, some more team stuff, and then play some buyer Sinone at the end. But let's talk about it because we projected this to happen. We talked about Zach's crystal ball, but now it's actually happened. That's at FSU landed a commitment from Amari Williams, top 200 prospect from the Benjamin School, home of Jordan Travis, listed as an athlete. He's a tight end, defensive end in high school. Chris, this dude is a defensive end, correct? And if so, like, how do you project him out moving forward?
Yeah, in high school, he played tight end as well, but in college, he's going to be an edge for FSU. That's what they recruited him as. That's what he came in here and met with them as. That's what I expect him to be. What up, Zach?
I was just going to say, I heard over the weekend that he's, during his entire career, he's going to play far more edge at FSU. But early on, I was told he could actually get some offensive snaps because he wants to see the field early, and he'll probably have a better shot just physically doing that at tight end. Then, you know, because he's going to have to bulk up a lot to play edge, you know, at the P4 level. I think, you know, at least I've been told that there's a chance that he could see some offensive snaps early.
He is adamant that he's an athlete. I mean, when they announced, I believe, Dad Mo Williams, great player at Kentucky, also pro himself, I believe was like number one athlete in the country or something like that. You could hear him in the background saying that. And that's been something with Amari throughout. Now, when he was ranked as a 25 prospect, he was the number one athlete in our rankings. When he got moved into 24, whenever you move a guy up a class, they usually diminish your ranking to some degree. He's ranked as the number six athlete in that class. The most interesting thing to me with Amari, talent's plenty there. I think he's a couple years away as a defensive end type, you know, sort of the Patrick Payton timeline. if you wanted to compare him to somebody in the sense of what I think it would take from the bulk up, become a guy that can be the guy and stuff like that. The interesting thing to me is reclassification. Reclassification has brought about a lot of mixed results with kids. And I'm not talking from an FSU perspective. I'm talking from a national perspective. I am interested how Amari handles that. I think, you know, Donnell Harris is a kid in recent years comes to mind, was a reclass. I don't think, to my knowledge, he's done a whole lot in the college game. It's an interesting exercise. I mean, there's been kids that have found success as reclassifications, and we certainly see kids moving up 6 months, but this is a 12-month jump, basically. So it'll be interesting to me how that impacts him, if it does impact him, if he's fine with handling it. But talent-wise, yeah, I think he's a good player that they got who's going to be a little bit on layaway for them and probably somebody they hope can do a good bit for them, say in 25, late 25, maybe into 26.
I think so with the evaluation process, when it comes to a reclassification, to your point, Chris, there's small data points. It's not that like, this isn't a super robust like sample size at all. Look, I'm checking all the boxes right now for our verbal crutches. I got data points. I got robust. I got check the boxes, but there's not a ton of that stuff right now. Like for guys who've reclassified nationally, I think it's going to become more and more prominent, but the examples generally of that small sample size we have aren't fantastic. So it explains like why he fell in the rankings a little bit when he was reclassified back in December. But still, ultimately, it's a top 200 prospect that you're getting with a ton of upside. Like the ball skills, the coordination are really good, and it shows up on both sides of the ball. Like he has multiple He has got some bend. He's got some explosive quick area stuff. Not like a long speed type of guy, which makes me wonder what like the tight end plus like kind of jumbo wide receiver skill set is for him long term. That's why I think defensive end makes the most sense. But for sure, like we heard like throughout the recruiting process, is a guy who wants to play both sides of the ball. I think there's some aspirations of like what that would mean from like a marketing standpoint for him to have the skills to be able to do both. We'll see. I do want to present this question to you guys though. Like he is for a variety of reasons. Amari has a ton of upside. There's a lot of physical tools there, but there are a lot of unknowns. I kind of dove into that with some of the scouting report stuff I did yesterday over at Knowles 24/7. Unknowns, I mean like level of competition, smaller. The reclass variable, age, okay. Not having a home, like a specific position that he's mastered and played his entire life. Like those are things that would on paper present a fairly like lengthy project, right? That would take a little bit of time. In this era of football, NIL era, transfer portal, being able to move over and over again, like is that an inherent risk that you want to take over and over? It's like this long-term project type of guy. How do we see that change, I guess, in the upcoming years, approach-wise?
Yeah, I mean, ideally, you'd want to get a guy that you know is going to pan out, but that's just so few and far between in the high school ranks. In my opinion, you need to land a few of these types every year because we've seen the options in the portal that show up at the edge position, you know, they're all pretty solid players at the top. You know, then occasionally you're going to get a Jermaine Johnson or a Jared Verse type. That's not every year. And I think the long-term projection of a kid like Amari Williams is high, and it's worth dipping into the high school ranks for a few of those types every year, in my opinion, because those are the ones that pan out to be the top edge rushers in the country. Whereas, you know, that second tier is kind of where you get into the, you know, guys that are entering the portal to find better spots. Like, I think that's where FSU's kind of been living over the past few cycles. They need, you know, they landed Pat Payton in 2021, and we've seen how that's turned out. Like, he's, you know, ACC Defensive Rookie of the Year, follows that up with another really solid season, and should, you know, project to even have a, you know, better year in 2024. So like, I like those types of takes. I think FSU's kind of been missing that. They've been, in my opinion, over the past few cycles, recruiting defensive ends out of the high school ranks that are, you know, maybe close to tapped out of their potential. Maybe that's because of length and, you know, how guys are filled out. Like, I think Amari Williams, we all agree, can put on 20, 25, 30 pounds, you know, once he gets to the next level, and probably be a pretty solid pass rusher in a few years. I'm a fan of this route. I think it's the way to go when you're trying to build the, you know, the trenches. If you're not landing the top guys in the high school ranks every cycle.
Yeah, I like to take in addition to D.D. Holmes, who may be an inside guy long term, but now for now is a long body, big edge. I think they did a good job with both of them. I think the idea really should be like, you know, most big body positions take a lot. Don't be shy of taking extra numbers.
Yeah.
The bigger the body, the tougher it is to project how they're going to develop, the tougher to project how quickly they're going to develop or if they're going to develop at all. And this day and age with the transfer portal and everything that comes with that too, there's a level of like, you got to know if a kid's going to have any patience. You know, Amari Williams is a kid who I don't think will do a whole lot in the first 24 months of his collegiate career, which used to be normal. It used to be almost like, that's expected. We're waiting for the redshirt junior year. That's when they're going to break out. That's no longer really what anybody's willing to wait for because patience has gone away from the system. So I think taking more in numbers to kind of protect yourself in case you have someone who grows impatient or just doesn't work makes more sense. So, yeah, I hope it continues to trend in this direction with the high school recruiting of it. You can always go get a portal kid, and, you know, it's made a strongest survive type thing. I don't get obsessed with they need to have a ton of high school versus they need to have a ton of portal. They need to have 85 guys they can go win football games with, and they need to have talent and depth at positions. And whatever the means or manners to get there is, go ahead and do it. But I think it's solid, and to Zach's point, to protect yourself by getting good high school kids that you can develop so you don't have to then have the crutch of having to get the portal guy down the road, which has happened to FSU to some degree in recent years.
This is why I wish we were privy to getting access to numbers that players sign for and what they will sign for, assuming that he does sign with Florida State on Wednesday, and what his ultimate NIL deal will be. And this is for every team nationally. It's like if you're spending – go ahead, Zach.
I was to say he's already signed. Yeah. I reported that he
signed. Oh, did you – I didn't know that was actually reported. I didn't want to step
on anyone's I want to make note of that because Florida State did gamble by taking Amari Williams or having him OV that final weekend in December because, you know, if you don't get him to sign in that window, you're not getting him because he's about to take multiple other OVs. Well, they did it. They accomplished that. So that's a kudos to the staff for getting that done. And, you know, I was before I was aware, I think I was made aware earlier in very early January that he
had January 8th-ish, I think.
Yeah. So I was aware that he had signed at that point. And, you know, obviously
it was a chilly Sunday morning. I remember it vividly. I was driving to yoga class.
Yes. I think I was in Tennessee at that point on a vacation with my girlfriend's family, but it was tough because we couldn't really say anything because it was up to Amari to announce it. You know, I didn't want to ruin his moment. So, you know, as soon as we figured that out, I was not, you know, as critical of the move because I thought, you know, obviously on paper, they didn't announce Amari Williams had signed in December. So it looked like he had not signed. He had told me, I think the day before, that he was signing in February. So,
and that was kind of the pivot, or at least it may not have been, but like it was timeline wise with Armando Blunt saga.
Yeah. So initially did not look good, but kudos to the staff for getting that done. Just wanted to point that out. He did officially sign during that window. FSU has yet to announce it, but I expect that to happen probably, you know, around this signing day coming up on Wednesday.
Amari dropped a few clues with all that too, because no coaches were showing up at his place at his school. Yeah. He didn't go anywhere. Yeah. So, yeah.
We were wondering how long it would be secret for, and it didn't actually state it until he kind of wanted to, but like there was somebody to figure out like, hey, this dude isn't hosting visits from other coaches that he's allowed.
Yeah. You're not seeing him hug Kirby Smart and hug Dabo Swinney and everybody else under sun.
But my larger point being, okay, so when he enrolls at Florida State and you can actually get into then NIL compensation, like how much are you paying? Because like that to me is like how much of a percentage of your budget are you allocating towards this player? Because to Chris's point, you're talking about a 24-month period as the most probable path to when he could contribute. And let's say it falls into plan, he's patient, and like towards the end of 2024 season or 2025 season, he ends up contributing. Well, then I think all that really affords you is the right of first negotiation again. And so you're paying potentially, like, that's why we need to know, why it would be helpful to know, like, what these different players are signing for all across the country, because that would help add a lot of context to what's a value add and maybe what's more of like a, you're investing resources into the chance to develop and then to get the right of of first refusal later on. So it's a fascinating wrinkle that was, we're kind of like trekking through these waters, trying to figure out what's a great addition, what's a good one. This seems to be like a really solid add though, because of the upside and the potential. And FSU has done a really nice job developing defensive ends, both from high school ranks and transfer portals. So a win for Florida State without a doubt. Zach mentioned signing day. That is on Wednesday, tomorrow. So we're recording this on Tuesday. Really doesn't have the same oomph that it used to have. Most of that happens in December. And then obviously it's the transfer portal that takes up a bunch of spots. So just a totally different vibe. But I want to go to our elder here among the group, our wise Chris Knee. Your favorite signing day story that you've been involved with, or most chaotic, or one that just, what's the one that you've been involved in covering to some extent or another that just felt the most bizarre?
Alex Collins, God rest his soul, comes to mind. I can't remember. That was definitely signing day, but I think it was. I'm pretty sure he was signing the paper there. Mom and him taking off, split in different directions, just pure chaos, difference of opinion on where they want him to sign. I think his name was Marquise Jones, wide receiver. We're talking probably about 07-ish. I believe he signed with FSU and Clemson, or the story goes that way, essentially, that happened. Ended up at Clemson, obviously. If I recall correctly, he was from South Carolina. That one comes to mind. Matthew Thomas, USC, which I think was technically a little bit after signing day, but still had to deal with signing day. And that one comes to mind in part because, well, I randomly ran into Matthew Thomas last week on campus. Good to see him back getting his degree.
Unicorn, as Jeff Cameron was fond of calling him back in the day.
Oh man, that thread brought back memories talking about Matthew Thomas. I thought Matthew Thomas was going to be all world. Like if I had $100,000 to bet that, and he did play in the NFL, but that he was like going to be a no doubt NFL guy, I would have bet it seeing him in high school. He was unbelievable, played all directions, big body, capable coming off the edge, position versatility, talented as all hell, vicious hitter. Came to college and just never got on track. And it was really, really weird. And he's still playing in CFL, getting his college degree. So good for him. Long term, it worked out. But yeah, it just brought back memories. But those are a few. I mean, there's a ton. Signing with two schools is up there, though. I mean, going to Laramie Tunsil's announcements and that one. I don't recall, again, if that was definitely on signing day, but I believe it was. It might have been immediately around it. But if I recall correctly, I remember Brian Allen seemed kind of disgusted by it all, just that whole process. I mean, that was a very grimy process for him to land at Ole Miss.
As we've since found out very publicly.
Right. Documented pretty well. It was between Ole Miss and Georgia at the end. It wasn't even an FSU thing. But, like, Ole Miss pulled out all the stops to make sure they got tons of talent. Hey, he's a multi-year, high-level paid pro. So was it worth it? Sure. In the NIL era, it would seem very normal. But back then, it felt really grimy. So those are a few that come to mind.
The whole blackmail part afterwards, getting to the NFL draft.
That was maybe guy in his life who sort of stepdad-ish and an agent that he had gotten rid of, I guess,
got pushed out and felt like being vindictive. Yeah, that was wild. That was wild.
They showed that a kid smoked weed. Oh, my God.
I don't think it was the weed as much as it was the gas mask, like visual, right as like that caused like an actual legitimate.
But you want to know, can your guy process and think outside the box and do things? And that that's outside the box. Just saying. I was kind of proud of him for it.
Junior Day, part three. The trilogy was completed. This aspect of it was this past weekend. Zach was in town to help out with Chris and Clay and Dane. So let's talk about it. I don't want to go too in-depth because there's a ton of coverage at Knowles 24/7. I understand our podcast audience isn't going to want to go through the weeds as much as what we provide for our Knowles 24/7 platform. But let's go for both you guys. First off, like three big names. Zach, I will start with you. Like who are the three that if you had to share with someone who's not super into recruiting, who would be like a guy that was a highlight for you? Three of them, please.
Yeah, well, he wasn't technically a junior day visitor, but Cam Riley, the Auburn linebacker transfer, FSU's kind of, you know, active in the linebacker market right now, trying to add another one after landing Sean Murphy from Alabama in the winter window. Cam Riley's not a guy that will enroll anytime soon. He'll join a team after the spring. Right now, he visited FSU over the weekend. Right now, it's FSU and NC State where he was at the week prior. you know, no imminent decision from what it sounds like. I think he does want to make a commitment before the April window opens up, because he doesn't want to obviously, you know, be competing for a spot with a bunch of other linebackers that may enter the portal during that window. FSU likes him. He's 6'5", 240 pounds, so kind of a unique frame there at the linebacker position, but he's versatile. He mentioned to Chris afterwards that he, you know, can play multiple positions within FSU's defense, maybe, you know, an edge guy at you know, certain spots. And I think Brent and I were talking, kind of compared him to a, you know, an Amari Gaynor role, you know, similar long frame guy that can rush the passer. So that'll be an interesting one to track over the next few months as he kind of windles down his process. Two other guys I'll mention, both were actually Sunday visitors, so not the main day of the junior day, but Caleb Cunningham, five-star wide receiver out of Mississippi, and Jordan Young, who's a four-star safety out of North Carolina. Caleb Cunningham's an interesting one. He visited like a year ago and told Dane, I believe, afterwards that FSU is his leader, and then didn't visit for basically, you know, another year or just under a year. And he was on campus for, what, 30 minutes, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, it was basically a pit stop between going home from UF and going back to Mississippi. It was mom, dad, I believe, with him. You know, basically got out, used the restroom, meet with Coach Norvell, spend a little time with Coach Dugan, see Gabe Fertitta, who knows him a little bit because of proximity to the area and the history of his coaching life. And, you know, then they hit the road and got out of there. So no photos, no tour, none of that, just – quick meet and greet, basically, but they know each other. It's always good to have that face-to-face.
And he did say in the interview afterwards that he will be returning to FSU for Legacy Weekend on March 23rd, which is, you know, supposed to be their big spring event. So we should see a lot of talent there. Another guy that mentioned possibly making it to that, four-star safety Jordan Young, like I mentioned, out of North Carolina. He had never been to FSU before. He's a guy that FSU is really high on at the safety position out of state. He's a guy that Clemson has a crystal ball in for. He's a number three safety in the country, 6 foot, 184 pounds. He was also at Alabama on Saturday before making it to FSU on Sunday. You know, I think he's a guy that FSU is going to continue to work on, try to get him back in for that Legacy Weekend in March, and then probably aim for an OV in June. So those are the three guys I wanted to highlight.
Yeah, Legacy Weekend sounds like it's March 23rd, and speaking of a few guys, including Cunningham and Young on Sunday. For me, Cunningham was probably the most important person that stepped on campus, but I don't want to be repetitive. Dontrell Glover, offensive lineman, former Alabama commitment, decommitted from Alabama about 3 weeks ago now. He came in, walked in with Alex Atkins, spent the entire day with Alex Atkins and the O-line guys, and just got a good feel for it. He officially came to know he had an offer during the visit. I wouldn't say he got offered on the visit. It was made clear to him he had an offer. He is someone Atkins has gone to see multiple times. Mike Norvell has gone to see. Very important recruit from up in Georgia at Langston Hughes High School. Kid that they like a lot. Probably an interior type for them, but he's played everything in his high school career. Tackle to the inside. I'm going to mention Gavin Nix, maybe not the most sexy of like high-level recruits in the sense of five-star, four-star type of thing. He's a solid four-star linebacker. Bradenton IMG Academy kid. Nix's interview to me was the best interview I've had with anybody in a hell of a long time when it's come to one of these like standard practice recruiting days. I just thought he was very in-depth, informative, had a kind of unique thought out take about why he likes FSU. Stability at FSU was a big thing to him, but the way he talked about it, I just was impressed by him. I like Gavin. I like his film. I like the player he is. I like the person he is. He drove that point home further with me in dealing with him on Saturday. And then I would probably go with Javen Hilson, commitment from Coco. It's just always good to get commitments back on campus. You know, he's a kid that FSU got away from Alabama after he had committed there. He backed off during the coaching change. FSU got him committed here, but Florida's still going to fight. Bama's still going to fight. Plenty of others are still going to fight. The more you can get somebody like that on campus, the better it is for you. FSU actually had him on campus during his birthday. He came in Friday, checked out tour of duty, stayed in the Saturday, took him most of Saturday. You know, had a good time building a relationship with JP, building a relationship with Norvell. Both of them took a helicopter down there to see him in recent weeks during the time that coaches could be on the road. It's just a matter of you got to keep putting money in the bank there and building a relationship. And, you know, to get him on campus is a good thing. Now the goal is obviously to get him back here in March or April, as is the case for most guys who bring in during junior days. Junior days is not a go all out, get commitment type of scenario. It's more a laying the groundwork, furthering the relationship, informing them on something they haven't previously been informed on, get them back here in March or April for a spring visit, get them back here in June or July for a camp visit, so on and so forth, continue to do that. That's how FSU operates. We've seen that over recent years, and that continued with this year in this junior day, 3-week period that we just concluded.
So one more junior day question I want for you guys, and for both of you. I'll start with Chris, though. General vibes from covering the three of them. It's kind of like the talent on campus, what guys are talking about, like how's the quote unquote energy around these visits right now?
I felt like year over year comparing junior days, I felt like this year was far smaller and more direct. They got guys they really truly want to have on campus. There was far less community service days, as we like to jokingly say, about guys you bring on who aren't really guys you're going to ever be involved with. We didn't have a lot of that this year. So it was much, much more focused, which I thought was good. I mean, the vibes are pretty good. FSU's coming off a year where they were 13-0 before, you know, half the team opted out and they got forced to play in Orange Bowl for money and got their ass whooped. But that isn't something that feels like it's being held against guys. In fact, you had multiple guys. Caleb Cunningham, I believe, was one who kind of talked about, you know, FSU getting snubbed and it being wrong and stuff. So I feel like the group think, for lack of a better term, is pretty good. Like, that's pretty consistent. Also, Gavin Nix talked a great deal about the consistency of the staff. But in talking to guys who have been recruited by this program for a year or two now, that's something that stands out. The faces they saw when they first started getting recruited are still the same faces. Mike Norvell's energy is always brought up anytime you ask a kid about what stands out about Norvell without directing it in that fashion. It's almost always first words are energy, the way he goes about the daily job, especially guys that see him in like a tour of duty setting. It always stands out. They're good. Like, junior days are a lot of work with very little return. I think I looked last year and had basically 8 to 10 guys end up signing with them that came to junior days versus probably 150 guys that rolled through the door last year. This year felt more like ballpark of 100. So it was a little more selective. I think they'll probably hit at a pretty similar rate as far as 8 to 10 type, but it's a lot of work, not a great deal of return, but it sets the table really well for what you're going to do in the spring and then into the summer. And then when you ultimately are going for the close as August is approaching for most guys.
Can't hear you.
Zach, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree on all that. I think it's, the talent level overall is similar to last year, but like Chris said, I think they've made more of a focus of, you know, because this is like this, it takes up a lot of time to set up a junior day, you know, thinking about, you know, making name tags for all the players and their guests. Like, that's a ton of work for the you know, recruiting and support staff. So I think they've made a concerted effort to kind of, you know, make these visit weekends a little bit smaller, but more concentrated with guys that they actually want, which I think is good for the staff and also, you know, good for us, honestly, because there's, you know, less guys that they're never, like Chris said, ever going to recruit that we have to sift through. And yeah, it's been good. I think it'll transition well into March and April, where they'll try to get, you know, most, if not all, of their top targets on campus.
I recall last year, because of the numbers being greater, there being instances where a kid would be like, I didn't get a ton of time with my position coach, yep, or I really didn't get face-to-face time with Norvell. I didn't feel like that this year. I felt like consistently it was so smaller group batches over 3 weekends that guys really did get time, face-to-face time with their position coaches or coordinator on that side of ball. And in the cases where guys should meet with Norvell, they did meet with Norvell. And they usually had lengthier discussions. It wasn't in passing. So I think FSU's done a good job of honing in on it. Some of that comes with winning. You don't have to, you know, spread yourself as wide and recruit top to bottom because you don't know who and what you might be in the next year when you feel pretty confident you're going to replicate success from 1 year to the next.
Are you guys ready for like a quiet February and March in terms of commitments and then a freak out leading up through June?
I don't believe in quiet existing around this program anymore. I think I've just come to the hard truth. I mean, now we got to be legal experts in addition to football and recruiting and other sport experts. So like, I just don't believe in like quietness. I don't think that exists. Something's always going to happen.
Chris, you actually,
I mean, hell, last week we had a commitment that wasn't a commitment. So, you know, like, we've already checked that box off and it's real early in 2024. So keep the ball rolling. Let's see what's next.
All right, commercial break. Chris hinted and teased a little bit at some legal discussion. We'll put on our legal caps when we return.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Should you ever set foot outside of the hotel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow, now streaming on Paramount Plus, only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil Returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.
Welcome back to On the Bench. Going to round out this episode with a little buyer Sanone, some talk about transfers, newcomer availability that's been ongoing. But first, let's talk about FSU and its ongoing lawsuit against the ACC and vice versa, the ACC's lawsuit against Florida State. A few weeks ago, the ACC filed an amended suit in North Carolina, basically requesting for a permanent injunction barring FSU from participating in the management of legal affairs while it, quote unquote, has a direct and material conflict of interest, unquote. Can you guys tell I'm reading? This is not my wheelhouse. With the ACC's purposes and objective, it also asked for a permanent injunction barring the Seminoles from disclosing confidential information about the TV agreement. That is coming from the Associated Press. The Atlantic Coast Conference accused Florida State of breach of contract. FSU struck back last week. And Chris, I love doing these because we automatically have to start sifting through dozens of pages of legalese, and not either of us.
Yours was like 50. Mine, this one that you're about to talk about, was roughly 20. Yeah, it's good times.
Yeah. So FSU struck back last week. It basically said the ACC accused the ACC of self-dealing, and names were named. John Swofford, former ACC commissioner, Chad Swofford, his son, John Skipper, former ESPN president, Raycom Sports. So they beefed it up to add names. And then additionally, they filed an amended suit in North Carolina. It's opposition to the ACC's. It's not an amended suit. This was an opposition to the ACC's motion to basically what they accused Florida State of in their North Carolina court. So a lot of stuff to talk about. I think the most substantial was FSU's counterpunch, what it filed in its amended Florida lawsuit. And that was naming names, right? You basically accused your partner, your financial partner, someone who you've said is supposed to have the best interest of teams in the league to represent, of nepotism. And basically, go ahead.
They took the Raycom dealings and put them out there. I mean, that's one of those things that's been talked about since the day that deal was struck, that John Swofford did it to enable his son to have a more significant job and strengthen the hold of what his son was doing. And you know, fast forward to present day, February 6th of 2024, and it's one of those things that is still a crutch that's severely enabling or disabling the ACC from being financially competitive to other conferences like the Big and the SEC. I was trying to look up the one that I wrote. I forget the specific line, but basically where they're like, you can't call something a secret just because you were stupid for doing it, was probably my favorite thing written in any of the legal briefs that we've had to read recently.
I'm trying to find it now. I mean, there have been some doozies there, and Florida State has been credit to who's ever crafting these, more poetic, I guess, in some of the way they're
billable hours, baby. Get that money. The next step in all of this is the decision, or however it's going to play out, of where we'll be tried. We'll be tried in Florida, we'll be tried in North Carolina. We'll both essentially say it can be tried there. You know, I'm not enough of a legal expert to tell you for sure that both can actually say yes. I don't know if one overrules the other. If vice versa. I think essentially both can say yes, and then that has to get legally sorted out.
Who would legally sort it out?
Like a
third state's going to jump in and be
No, I don't think you go with some kind of arbitration. I think essentially it's heard on each end, and then a decision is reached mutually. The thing I've enjoyed is that we're at the point where the gloves are off and we're throwing bare knuckle punches, and it's going to be anything and everything that's ever been mentioned, accused of, or believed to have happened that caused the legal and financial situations that we're currently in are going to be public view. And it's clear as day, the ACC/ESPN to a degree are, strongly against the idea of legal documents being put out there about agreements, or, agreements that are very much made on, very thin sheets of paper, versus FSU, who's just like, well, you basically promised us financial competency, that we're going to be able to be confident that we'd be able to compete at the highest level in the time of this TV contract. And clearly that is not what's going on. And this is also why you entered into such deals, which is the, doing things for yourself, which was very much put out there in public view.
Chris, FSU also, to your last point, like FSU also told or accused the ACC in the most recent one, what they filed in opposition of North ACC's motion in North Carolina court, was like, hey, you guys sued us first. So like documents that we use, you're saying that we can't put out there, like this was you guys who did this first, which was the whole, like the most bizarre thing about all this that I still don't understand and probably need to talk to somebody.
From what I always have understood in talking to some people that deal with matters of these sorts, corporate law and such, is the reason they filed in North Carolina first is their goal is ultimately getting in North Carolina.
But how can you sue someone for doing something that they have not done yet?
Buddy, if I could answer that question, I wouldn't be on this podcast. I'd be raking in money, banking it. But from what I understand, that is essentially we were the first to the table is the argument to try to get it tried in North Carolina, because obviously the belief is North Carolina is going to be more favorable for the ACC versus Leon County Court would be more favorable to Florida State.
Meanwhile, North Carolina, like UNC, is starting to have some reservations about
their ACC future.
Whoa, yeah, all of a sudden you're barking, which FSU mentioned that, by the way, in their initial complaint, is that, so it's funny, like they knew that this was going to, or they anticipated this being another evolution, was UNC getting involved. And they mentioned that UNC's athletic director, was it Bubba Cunningham?
Yeah, Bubba Cunningham.
We got Bubba's, we got Chad's. Man, this is North Carolina. Just
The barking did not come from Bubba, who criticized FSU for barking. It came from their chancellor and board of trustees.
Yes. But as we've seen, like sometimes the AD throws the grenade and then steps back and lets the people higher up the totem pole. Is it higher up the totem pole or lower? Higher.
Higher. So when we were trending towards the direction of all of this becoming a legal matter before either the ACC or FSU officially filed suit, FSU Board of Trustees, to be clear, I used to be a firm believer that there would be multiple parties jumping in together, specifically FSU and Clemson, with the belief that maybe UNC and Virginia as well. Those have always kind of been the rumored four that if a move's going to be made, it's probably those four. The fact that FSU jumped into the pool by itself and got the party started, I don't really have a desire at this point for anybody else to jump in with FSU. I do like that it's showing weakness within the league and ultimately what's coming, which is a future similar to the Pac-12 that's now called the Pac-2. But I don't necessarily need them to be dancing partners. At this point, FSU is by themselves, and they are perfectly comfortable being by themselves. There's a reason the messaging about private equity has been put out there. There's a reason why FSU, every time there's a legal step, they're ready for the next legal step. They are prepared for this fight. They were ready for this fight. They had prepared for this fight for a long, long time before it actually got to the point where they were fighting. Now that they're in the fight, they're not going to cower and back down. They're not going to slow their roll with regards to this. FSU is ready to play the long game. Do I think the ACC or FSU really wants to? Probably not. From a financial standpoint, from a muddy in the water standpoint, from the ultimate outcome standpoint, neither party probably truly wants to play the long game. But FSU is willing to, and they're willing to do it by themselves. So at this point, I don't have a necessity that Clemson, who's been very cowardly about this, or North Carolina, who accused FSU of barking and is now doing the same, or Virginia, who might just be a tag along like a Girl Scout cookie, I don't have a need for them to necessarily jump in with FSU. But like if they want to, it's going to make it more messy, more dirty, and create a multi-front issue for the ACC. And I'm all for that. So like I'm good with it either way, but I don't need them to. Like it's not one of these things where going into it, I believe it would be better for FSU if they had people standing shoulder to shoulder with them. Now that they're in it by themselves and it's clear as day the way they're willing to go about fighting this, I don't think it's a necessity.
It's like in The Office when Andy had the symposium and people come to the office to get them to buy in a packaging plan. And then all of a sudden, Stanley and Phyllis and everyone else wanted in when they realized he was going to close and that there was actually some money to be gained. It's just like that. What's your favorite, Zach? What's your favorite Girl Scout cookie since Chris is bringing up tagalongs? It's got to be Thin Mint, right? There's no way it's not.
Yeah, I love Thin Mint. But what are the other ones called? Samoas or whatever?
I don't know. Those. I'm not going to touch that one.
They're the ones that are like have caramel on it. Those ones are fire. Boring. But I do like Thin Mints a lot.
Chilled Thin Mints. Put them in the freezer. All righty. Last thing on that. We've passed the point of like no return. Like there's no going back from this. FSU will not be in the ACC in several years. I don't know what that's going to look like financially, but it's not happening at this point.
The jurisdiction is the next thing that's probably going to truly happen. There may be other filings, you know, amendments to filings and things of that sort. But in general, the next big step in this feels like jurisdiction. I am very interested to see if the two parties come to the table and start chatting about exit and stuff, or if we're just going to progress to truly a legal battle. I think FSU is comfortable with either. I think it more rests on the ACC, but FSU is not going to relent on wanting documents to be dumped at a high level. And it's clear as day the ACC has no interest in that being done.
And FSU is going to continue to, like, I wonder how many bullets FSU has left to fire, because that the one last week with bringing up the nepotism and whatnot was like, that's you're now playing in the mud a little bit with that. And that's FSU showing like they will continue to fight and scrap and claw to get out of this. So I wonder like what else is left if these kind of things continue to come up. I also wonder if the ACC, if it really even matters, if there's going to like, no matter what, if Florida State leaves, whether it's through a lawsuit or it's through just negotiations and a buyout, like the ACC's done.
Yeah, I mean, I think
that's the path it's going down at this point. So
Want to get completely ahead of ourselves because we thought the Big 12 was going to die, and somehow they've become the resurgent cool hippie of the bunch.
Well, they got UCF, which is a upward trending brand.
But like Colorado, they pulled it off where they could survive. But there is the outcome also where you just become the Pac-12, aka the Pac-2. Like, yeah. I definitely think that exists. I'll put it this way. I'm not confident that ACC leadership right now knows what the hell it's going to do if the meteor actually hits Earth.
Well, it's like
Stanford, SMU. Like, one out of three is not bad.
I got to take a call real quick, gentlemen. You want to move to Byers Sonone? I got the prompts I sent to you.
No, right? Just wait. Take the call.
All right. They're going to be here in 10 minutes.
Lightning round, Byers Sonone, brought to you by the Turner Group. Thank you, Becky.
Lightning round, fire, rapid. Byers Sonone coming up here. We're going to have to skip some things apart because I'm rambling right now. I have a new mattress coming. The Sleep Number, gone. It's dead. It's dead to me. We got a new one coming. And they're going to be here.
Sleep Number is the ACC. New mattress, Big Ten.
By Byers Sonone. And Byers Sonone is brought to you by
the Turner Group and Becky.
Colin, Amy, Becky, if you're looking to buy or sell a home in the state of Florida, no place better than the Turner Group to get started on that process. First one, Knowles, 198593, very original, buy or Sonone, walk with Papooches, edge recruiting, high school portal. That's it. Like, are we walking with Papooches at this point?
I'm buying. I tried to get Javion to actually say walk with Papooches in the interview, but he didn't. But I was trying. I made an effort.
I'm buying the portal. I'm Sononing high school for now, but it's on the right track.
And then the originator of Walk with Papooches, Byers Sonone, Coach Papooches is in on the Walk with Papooches.
100% buy. If you look at his, if you look at his tweet, I think that was purposeful. After the Amari Williams announcement, he tweeted the Peaky Blinders
walking.
They got all the guys walking behind him. So,
yeah, I'm buying it. I may have dropped a reference or two to it directly to him on Saturday, and he was game for it.
Okay. All right. So that's the kind of reporting that we provide here at Knowles 24/7. We're Castro Tycho. I will not struggle with this one day. Byers Sonone, it's a prove it year for Atkins. I'm going to throw a Sonone here. Like, there are some concerns with recruiting and development of some of the younger players, right? But like the offensive line has more or less gotten better year over year. And granted, it was a lower place to start from, but the idea that someone who's done nothing but improve the position group every season, all of a sudden is in a prove it year. I think that's a step too far.
So yeah. Then, also he has a show clause. So, I mean, I don't know if he'd go anywhere, but yeah, also known that I do think that the development of high school players along the offensive line needs to get a little bit better. Right. Cause we've seen, you know, a few guys make the jump into the starting lineup, Maurice Smith and Robert Scott. But like some of those guys that came in, you know, 2021, 2022, and even 2023, like it's time, right? Like we should see some of those guys crack the lineup. And we've seen some of them already transfer out, like a Quayshon Sapp or Dotry Richardson. But guys like Jalen Early, Julian Armella, Lucas Simmons is in year two. Obviously, he had a period of time where he was not practicing for a while, so that could delay his development. But do think that it's important for some of those guys to make it into that lineup. But no, also known on it being a prove-it year.
Yeah, also known on it being a little harsh. I will buy, though, that, yes, it is important at some point to start seeing returns on the high school recruiting. But I think it's also worth remembering at a position that it's a multi-year situation. You're very rarely ever going to get a freshman or redshirt freshman alignment to give you a whole lot. It's usually year three to year four where it matters. But I would like to see a guy like a Jalen Early or Julian Armella specifically break through. And I do think Jalen Early is probably a guy that's most on the verge of doing that.
Flounder Pounder. It's a hell of a name. Byer Sidone. DJU will be a more quote-unquote willing running quarterback, which benefits the run game. So that's, I think, compared to Jordan Travis. Go ahead, Zach.
Yeah, buy. I mean, if you're saying, if you're putting willing, then I do think it's a buy. You know, better, I don't, you know, I would Sinone that, because obviously we know that Jordan was special in that department, but later in his career, he was not willing. So yes, I do think that DJU is a guy that is going to be more durable than Jordan Travis, obviously, with his size, 6'5", 260 pounds, right? Like he's going to be able to run more and sustain hits when compared to Jordan. But yeah, I think I do think he's going to be more willing, and that's going to help FSU's run game.
I'll buy because I think the offense is going to necessitate it a little bit more. I think obviously similar to what Zach said, though, the style is going to be different. I mean, Jordan was a little bit more Houdini, and I think DJ is just going to be a little more dump truck.
Do you want a Porsche or a tank to get from point A to point B? I think with Jordan last year, one thing I will push back on is the idea of willing. Like, yeah, there were times where he wouldn't take off and scramble because they were trying to get the passing game going to the efficiency they wanted. But like part of that was by design. Like they did not want Jordan running a ton.
Yeah. Which means he wasn't willing to run because
that's not what that means. Mediate, Chris. Parse
out. There were times where he did not run and it was a detriment to FSU's offense.
Correct. I think that was by
design. I think the goal
by design.
Jordan, they wanted to be able to unleash him against Florida, ACC championship game, and all that, and that got taken away from them. Like I think that they were trying to keep body blows off of him as long as possible is my point.
I would not describe him as a willing runner in FSU's offense in 2023.
Okay, fine.
Whether that's by design or not.
NYC Null 92, Mario can't come up with new lies on the recruiting trail and is running out of time if he doesn't win 8 games this season.
That schedule is soft as hell.
I don't know about the lies part. I don't want to get into that.
New year, new you.
I don't know if he's lying. I know that he pressures the shit out of people down there, both in media and like as unrelenting as a recruiter, which could be a good thing, but I don't know that he's lying. That's not responsible for me to say. What I do think is, yeah, the pressure would, I buy that there is a ramp up of pressure if they don't win 8 games with that soft schedule and with Cam Ward and you now have a quarterback and yeah, you got to win at some level and show legitimate growth again than what you had, more so than what you had last year.
Yeah, I'm buying that between the investment in high school and portal recruiting for them and bring a guy like Cam Ward in, who I'm sure they paid a pretty penny for because of the timing. It's now for them to try to get to double-digit wins. And I think if they fail to get there, that I don't think it's a hot seat situation where he immediately gets fired, but I think it's one of those situations where the tide very much turns with regards to what is Mario ultimately going to be as Miami's head coach.
I absolutely agree with Chris.
Okay, I got 3 more minutes going here. Let's see. B Dodson, this is an interesting prompt. The pre-spring 2024 team will beat the pre-spring 2022 team on a neutral site.
In the sense of what I think of the two teams, yeah, I'd buy that. What 2022 became, I don't know about that.
See, that's
my pre-spring about version of 2022 roster? Was lesser than what it ultimately became, what I knew it would to be as we watched the year play out.
For sure. Yeah, that's an interesting timeline of where you're evaluating
guys. But are we talking pre-spring, Zach? Are we talking about pre-spring rosters or pre-spring, like just
rosters, expected production,
expected, what we think ultimately expectation. Would be. Okay. All right. Zach's trying to understand what I'm asking.
Was it pre-spring 2022 when they had like five scholarship receivers or something? Because like they had like a ton of guys injured during that time, I believe.
What was the spring Chris was disgusted? Was that 2021?
Yeah.
That was when Deckerhoff did the spring game, when he coached in the spring game.
Because you gave Deckerhoff a warning.
I was like, good luck, good sir.
Yeah.
That was in 22. 22 wasn't that bad.
My how far they've come.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I think that's kind of like 9-10 wins is kind of your target. So I think it would be an interesting battle. I think this team has more raw talent to work with. How quickly you're able to get them all up to speed, we will see.
Yeah. So real quick on that, Bill Connolly had the article yesterday about returning production. I know those numbers are skewed this day and age because of portal and such, but it had me thinking of like Johnny Wilson was in the prism of did not bring much production to the new team he came to. And then he went and became arguably the best receiver on that team that year. Like, so those things are so tough to call this day and age because, you know, the influx of production for guys.
We lost Brendan.
The man's all about mattress.
I'll move on to the next one. Let me find the Byers-Sonnone prompt.
I've got him here. So I'll do the link to the future one that he skipped. Byers-Sonnone presented by
the Turner Group.
Clay Fink will have a staff badge by the time spring football starts. I'll buy that. I'll text somebody today to try to get that done today. Boy Clay deserves it. The man of many, many spreadsheets.
Yeah.
Saw Zach's mother on Saturday evening. Good to always see her. She asked Zach if he was great with sheets. And I think Zach's response wasn't, but it should have been, I'm good, but I'm not Clay Fink good.
True. Yeah. He's the master of that. I got this one. Byers-Sonnone, sponsored by the Turner Group. There will be less linebacker recruiting rants from Zach during the 2025 cycle.
We probably will still get at least one good one, but there'll be less. So I'll buy that there'll be less. But we're still going to get it. There's going to be some point.
Yeah. I mean, the board is looking nice, but they do have to land them.
28 offers now, I think I saw yesterday.
Really?
I was looking at I think it's in that ballpark. It's
okay.
It's a lot of numbers.
Yeah.
There'll be that point where like TJ Alford goes somewhere and Ty Jackson commits elsewhere out of blue and another one that we like and we value commits out of blue. And Zach might just have enough of it, and that's his thing. Like that some people get stuck on certain things and they're not allowed to come off it. And that might be it for Zach. But it does feel like they're recruiting out of position in a much better way. And the current returns of getting guys on campus and recruiting them, Tavion Wallace, for example, a couple weeks ago, feels much better than it did 12 months ago.
Yeah, for instance, like the guy like Jaden Perlot or whatever that's committed to Georgia, he put out like a statement saying, oh, you know, I dropped Florida State. I think it was a mutual parting of ways, but like, you know, I didn't freak out over that. Maybe that's a little
Have you cared about Jaden Perlot since December 20th when KJ Bolden went to Georgia?
I probably even before that, no. But yeah, it was trending like, you know, away from FSU ever since. I mean, the kid literally like was telling people around him that he was flipping to FSU and like left Georgia's like signee group chat or commit group chat. So like, yeah, that wasn't a. When those crystal balls came in, that wasn't a prediction. That was a, pretty guaranteed thing. But obviously, that did not happen. That was a wild one.
That one always felt like it was directly connected to KJ.
Yeah, it did. Because he was interested separately in FSU and had visited multiple times. But when KJ was trending to Florida State over the summer, he had gotten wind of that, and I think he kind of wanted to. You know, ride the coattails of that commitment. But Georgia put a stop to that pretty quickly once they figured out that was going on. So
I hate the term clickbait and I don't like using it towards others in our industry, especially someone who we just worked with, who we like. That felt like clickbait to me yesterday. I mean, whatever. Like, I saw that and I saw people talking about it on the side. And I'm like, it's 2024. I don't think we have literally spoken about this young man since the calendar changed to 2024.
Yeah.
So cool. He put out that quote, but like, that's like moving 8 states away and saying, I'm not coming home. Like, no shit.
Yeah. So, it's all good. Let me look. Buyer Sinone by Noel Duke, brought to you by the Turner Group. Norvell being in contention for the Bama job counteracted FSU being snubbed for playoffs in regards to recruiting.
It just changed narratives. I mean, that's what half of this job seems to be this day and age. Of, yeah. What are we going to talk about way too much for a short period of time? And obviously from December 3rd on, the snub was prevalent and it still permeates. I mean, Kirk is still taking bullets from the FSU fan base here. But yeah, the Norvell saying, no, I'm staying at FSU when the Alabama job was open and the reports of an offer being made to him were made. It does change. And it just shows, you know, and I reference this with like Gavin Nix and stuff. The consistency of the staff in Tallahassee has been continuous. And I think that's beneficial to FSU recruiting. And the Norvell saying no, or however you want to describe it, towards the Alabama gig is the cherry on top of that current cupcake.
Yeah, I'm going to Sinone it being like a complete counter to it, because that was just such a monumental move, you know, leaving FSU out. And it did impact FSU's recruiting efforts, especially in the 24 cycle. I don't know that it's going to, you know, vastly impact 2025, right? Like, I think we you know, don't see much mention of it when we're talking to recruits. Some guys mention it. Like, I think, I mean, it might almost seems like a positive impact. Solomon Thomas said when he heard that FSU was left out of the playoffs, he committed to FSU because he felt something like in himself that he was like, you know, pissed off about that. Yeah. And he's like, man, I feel this way about a school. I might as well commit there. So
there was a degree of me that worried when FSU got snubbed that FSU was going to be viewed as they're outside the P2. You know, they can't compete because they're not big or SEC. And
that might be a thing for certain kids, right?
But it hasn't shown itself a whole lot in us talking to guys.
True. Yeah, definitely. Finally, Big Earn, Buyer Sinone, Turner Group, via Tina and Becky.
Becky!
FSU adds some real recruiting firepower to the off-field staff this offseason.
I'll Sinone it. I don't think it's going to change drastically. I think, you know, Stock still filled the position left by John Garrett's departure to a degree. Yeah. And Rick's a good addition because he's a veteran coach who has some skin in the game when it comes to Florida State. Smart guy who's done about every job under the sun. That's a positive for you. I don't think FSU is about to like revolutionize their staff. So I guess I'm Sinone that.
Yeah, I think, and you know, this is kind of the season for off-field additions from what I've been told. And I think, you know, they'll probably make a few more hires in that department, but a lot of the hires that they made, because, you know, obviously, like you said, John Garrett left for Duke. Some of the off-field staffers followed him to Duke to be in, you know, better positions there. FSU promoted from within. They had, you know, some student assistants and grad assistants that they elevated to bigger roles within their off-field operation. So I think we do see a few more additions to the off-field staff. But like you said, Chris, I don't think they're about to revolutionize it and make it some crazy recruiting operation with, you know, a few. There's only so much you can do in an off-field role, right? Like, I think we understand that. And you know, if you're going to really change how you recruit, it's going to come down to the people that are on field and going out to – the ones that are able to go out and see kids and conduct in-home visits and all that. So,
yeah, I think it's less about splash and more about efficiency and having every job covered in the correct manner. They have some people within that department who have done a phenomenal job. I think Maddie, for example, who does a lot of on-campus recruiting stuff, watching her operate during a junior day, you know, making sure all the trains are on time, things are going the right way, people are communicating, all that, it's impressive. And I think the idea is just to continue to add people of that sort, of that cloth, who can do those jobs at a high level and make sure it operates really well. I think that's ultimately, it's a manpower thing as much as anything. As you're having 25 to 50 kids on campus in a 4 to 6 hour segment with 10 on-field coaches who have to meet with, you know, half a dozen to 8 to 10 kids at a time during those visits. It's all about making sure that this kid is where he's supposed to be when he's supposed to be there. This kid is, you know, with that coach because that coach is now free, so on and so forth. I think it's more about that kind of stuff than necessarily going and getting guys who suddenly make this massive splash in recruiting. I do think, to Mike Norvell's credit and guys that work with him within that department, they're always looking for what can we do better and how can we do it better. So if there's something there, they might do that, go a different direction, but I haven't heard anything specific regarding that.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, like, for instance, with the John Garrett hire, like the John Garrett moving on to Duke and them hiring Rick Stockstill, like, I think that's an upgrade personally. Like, I do think that Stockstill is going to provide a really good, you know, evaluation tool for FSU this upcoming year. Like, I think it's important for, because FSU relies heavily on you know, that role. And then he's the offensive guy now. And then the defensive role is Justin Krause, who's been with Norvell for a long time, was at you know, with him at Memphis. And they rely on those two positions heavily to conduct evaluations for their high school recruiting and transfer portal. So, very important positions. And I do think that, you know, Stockstill's experience is going to provide a great deal of information and correct evaluations for FSU on the offensive side of the football.
The more smart people you can have in the room, the better off you are.
Absolutely. I think that's it. That's all the buyer Sinones. So for Zach Blossy and Chris Nee and Brendan Sinone, that was On the Bench. Appreciate you guys listening. Stay tuned to Noles 24/7. We're going to have a ton of content. Peace out.
Yeah. One last thing, 60% off. I think it's still running right now. Might run through tomorrow, end of signing day. So through end of Wednesday. You missed out on 75% off yesterday, but 60% off annual is still a very good deal. If you need any guidance with that, reach out to any of us. All right. Bye, peeps.
Bye.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sanfel, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.